Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilick, Suji DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Azure Podcast. I'm your host, Evan Basilick, and we've also got my fellow co-host, Russell, here today. The rest of the gang is off doing, I don't know, or talking to customers, writing code, I don't know, whatever stuff they're doing today. we're here recording this on September 4th. This is episode number 504, and we're going to be talking about Azure Reliability SRE. We'll get into what SRE is in just a couple of minutes with our special guest, Sadaf Khan. She'll sort of fill us in what this SRE thing is. But before we get into that, Russell, I think you've got some news.
Yeah, thank you, Evan. We've got five or six different pieces of news come up. The ones that caught my eye, so a public preview feature for Azure Storage. And so I don't know if you come, well, you've obviously come across it in the past, but when we've done the geographic redundant storage in the past, The only way to trigger that is if we would have a complete site or region failure, and Microsoft would then trigger it.
And we trigger it at that point, yeah.
Correct, yeah. But now there's a private public preview feature where customers can manage that and plan for it. So there's that ability to do a planned failover for Azure Storage that's been announced in public preview. Another one that I thought was quite nice was virtual machine scale set. So this is where you can typically you create a set of VMs. So you define one VM image and you allow it to automatically scale up and scale back down again. And it does that by creating other VMs that are the same. You can now mix the different instances in those virtual machine scale sets. So it doesn't have to be the same size or footprint that goes up and down with each of those. That again is in public preview. Workspaces in Azure API management, which is a new feature. And this kind of follows a bit of a pattern that we're seeing across some of the other services that kind of enable in the portal an area for teams to kind of do a bit more self-serve and have a bit more autonomy. So this enables teams of API developers or teams that are managing API products to kind of create them, manage them, publish the APIs themselves, and have that autonomy over it and do it that way. So that's workspaces in Azure API management, and that's generally available as of the end of August. What else have we got? So NetApp file storage. There was, I know you covered a bit on NetApps last week, but there's another announcement now about the general availability of cool access. So standard level capacity pools now, and volumes that you create in premium and ultra service level, you can now transparently have them store data in cost-effective Azure storage accounts based on an access pattern that you define in there. So that's quite nice. Redis Cache has got an update as well for larger enterprises. So there's a new tier, and that enables you to go to several hundred gigabytes of memory and up to 240 vCPUs of compute.
That's a lot of CPUs for a Redis Cache. That is a big Redis Cache.
Yeah. So I'd love to see what workloads are using those kinds of things.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, as a modern cloud app architecture, that would be good to see. And The final one for me was on Arrow, so Azure Red Hat OpenShift. Again, it's about scale, and Red Hat OpenShift clusters can now go up to 250 nodes. So that's quite a big increase from the previous limit, which was 62. So that's great. And there's an implementation there of multiple different IP addresses per cluster, load balancer in there as well. So you can distribute your network traffic better and general performance improvement overall. So that was it for this week. But it seems like updates are coming kind of thick and fast.
It's no quiet time at the moment. Everybody's trying to get it out before we get into end of year at this point. So great. So at this point, let's get over to our special guest, Sadaf. So Sadaf, you know, you and I used to, before I moved back to CSS, we were part of the same Azure customer experience team. But I was in the reliability arm of the organization, so live site and whatnot. And you were over in our SRE team. So start out with, like, first, what is SRE? And then second off, like how does that come into play when we talk about Azure reliability all up? Like, how do y'all work with the other teams? Like, what's your life look like?
Yeah. Yes. So the basic, you know, SRE stands for Site Reliability Engineering. Okay. I am part of the team where our main job function is essentially to bring up or improve the reliability and the quality of a service. So our operating model or business model is such that we have standing engagements, or you can say contracts, with various services. Currently, we, you know, work with like 6 or 7 services. Well, not 6 or 7 engagements, which has, you know, 13 or 14 services in total. So we have those standing contracts or engagements or partnerships that we have with these services. And we essentially help them execute their business in such a way that it brings up the reliability of the service. And that includes a lot of, you know, kind of, you know, the fundamentals, the service fundamentals, then, you know, service health, operational excellence, or life site, as, you know, previously called, and so on and so forth. So this is what we do overall, help bring services. And there are different metrics and KPIs that we use throughout the process or the life of the engagement to determine where we stand at currently and what where are we headed to in future.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think the thing that struck me when I first found out about your team, and love if you could expand on it a little bit more, is part of the reason, like, at some level, you know, reliability is owned by every dev for every service, but it is a skill set in and of itself, right? Y'all have that skill set. Like when you go in and have conversations with these dev teams, what does that conversation look like? Are they, I mean, I assume they're not resistant to y'all showing up, but like, where do you start and how do you decide like what you work on within a given service? Like, how's that thought process go?
Yeah, very interesting question. So I had the same question when I joined SRE. What I've learned and observed over the years is it starts at the, you know, at a very core level, where I think what our wins in the previous semester or the previous semesters with other services have always been an influence in getting new services on board. So just as an example, this year we had we added a total of 4 new services to our cohort. And all of that was, you know, there was so once we had that executive level agreement or contract in place, and when we actually went in, you know, into the team doing the actual groundwork, there was a lot of resistance. And I would say it took me like a good, you know, 2-3 months to prove that we are able to do what deliver on, you know, our promises, just kind of working with them. So initially, I felt there was a resistance to kind of assign or give us authority in terms of, you know, doing the engineering code changes. Now we have that. After 6 months, I recently started a new engagement in February of this year or March of this year. And at the end of this semester, I can, you know, proudly say that we are getting that trust and that partnership that we were headed towards. Now it is in a firm place. And now we are able to do more of the engineering changes. And I think that comes with the trust that we have built throughout the process.
Yeah. Y'all have a good reputation about sort of really helping services, you know, build in that stability, build in the rent, right? SLOs and SLIs, service level objectives and service level indicators.
Yeah.
As you go.
So you actually go in with your team and make changes to the code and the services directly. You're not just kind of advising and assessing. You're actually going in and making changes as well.
Yes. So it's not just a consultative role. It was the initial 2 or 3 months, I would say. Now we are actually going in and making changes on, you know, the service that I work with. So we are actually going in and making changes on, you know, different areas, including security, as well as, you know, doing a life site or operational efficiency changes overall.
Okay. And I guess that resistance that you talked about, is that mainly because the teams feel like you're coming in from outside without understanding stuff maybe to the level that they do, and you're generally slowing down their sprints? Is that
where they're coming from? And And rightfully so, I actually understand, because we come not knowing anything about the service. And then it's a very complex service that we are working on with about, you know, close to 15 billion transactions on a normal day. So it's a huge service, complex service. And I understand the resistance, or, you know, it takes time to build that trust for us to get that, you know, to get that leverage to actually go and make code changes. But now the last 2 or 3 months, I would say, yes, we have been getting, you know, more assignments as such, you know, more agreements, more, you know, partnering in more areas. And this is not just across, you know, security, but also across various other areas where we are just, you know, kind of helping them achieve the reliability, better reliability.
When y'all come in, you know, there's sort of a scope of what you're looking at, right? You're generally not looking at like changing some functional API or whatever. Like you're looking at things like, I mean, what are the things you're focused on? Is it logging? Is it error messages? Like what are the kinds of code that you're sort of honing in on as you're working on that?
So to take a step back, we recently, about 2 or 3 years back, developed a playbook, which is our kind of handbook of how we do business. And that playbook kind of directs our efforts in various phases. So, you know, we come in, when we start engaging with a service, we first focus on fundamentals, service fundamentals. That is something as basic as, you know, their security markers, you know, and I don't want to use the specific terms, but, you know, just like the security markers that we have all across Azure.
Right.
We work on bringing those up. A lot of other, you know, areas that go with in when we think about service fundamentals. Then we move on to areas such as service health. You know, how do we do our releases in a, you know, managed fashion, which is safe, you know, which follows the safe deployment practices.
Yeah, we've talked about safe deployment practices on the show in the past. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yes. So kind of, you know, that. And then from then onwards, we go to operational efficiency, or LifeSight as previously called. How do we run it in a way where every incident is reviewed? You know, we have the root cause and we have a fix in place, the mitigation, and not just that, but how do we avoid that in future? How do we prevent that from happening again? What are the things that SRE can do to make it, bring it to a better place? And then there are other phases where I personally don't have experience in, but we go on to, you know, scalability, benchmarking, and so on and so forth. And anything and everything is in the scope of this. We do start small. So for example, you know, these days, the last semester, we have been working on security, you know, some of the areas
just
in security.
Just a little across the company, just a little.
Yes, just a little across the company, yes. And then apart from that, we I think our focus was also not just learning about the architecture, but also, you know, doing deployments of those small code changes, which are now turning into, you know, big partnerships in various areas. So everything, you know, is in scope.
Right. And what stage of kind of service maturity do you come in? Because talking about security and stuff like that, you know, I would have thought that that's baked in right from the outset before the service is even designed and being thought about. Security is being planned, right? Do the properties of site reliability engineering, that those capabilities and that, does that not get kind of baked in the same way from the very outset?
Yes, I think it depends on the service. We have this, the answer to this question is very, I think, broad. We have had gone into services which are, you know, in just like 10 years old. And we have had gone in a partnership with services which are mature, which have been there for a long time, but there have been areas where there was, you know, they were lacking in certain areas. Not just because it was not thought about, or just because I think the teams had their limitation, their restrictions, resource constraints. They focused on other areas which were more important to the business, you know. So I think it really depends on the service. The service that I work with has been around for some time, but as I said, it's complex with and it's really you know, a high number of transactions per day, and because of that, the scalability is always, you know, a factor when we think about this service specifically, and so on and so forth. So it depends on the service.
Is it right to think about the work that y'all do as so like when I think about, so I'm a developer, I'm going to sit down and write something. Right. What I am typically focused on is how do I accomplish the functional goal or the business goal of what I'm designing? And I'm probably an expert in that, right? If I'm writing something for the TCP stack, I probably know the TCP protocol, you know, backwards and forwards, and I'm trying to figure out that. But I may not be an expert in scalability or logging or, you know, service health integration or whatever that sort of a common set of things that we expect all of our services to be. Is that sort of how to think about the work that y'all are doing, which is you're bringing this common set of skills and you're able to go talk to these different teams and bring that in and still let them focus on sort of the area that you'll never really be an expert in, which is, you know, how the TCP stack, you know, sort of works, yeah, or responds to that protocol. Like, is that sort of the partnership when y'all look, yes, at this, is you're bringing that generalized knowledge in that they may not be experts in, but they still need.
Yeah. Yeah. You nailed it. Absolutely.
Perfect.
This is okay. What we do. As an example, you know, we have a database specialist on our team. What we do is we go in. So they are doing their job. The service is doing their job. The feature, mm-hmm, teams are doing what they're supposed to do. We go in and maybe, you know, do an assessment on the database's health, for example. And then we would come up with suggestions based on, you know, the field results on, mm-hmm, what is lacking there and what can be done to bring up the health of those databases. The service that I work with has close to like 20,000 databases right now. And we are working through, and, you know, this is in very initial stages, but this is, for example, one of the area that we focus on. Similarly, volume reduction. So their services, you know, doing, the service team is doing what they're supposed to do. We go in and maybe track and manage the metric of, for example, volume. You know, how is the incident volume looking like?
Oh,
how is,
yeah,
the noise, signal to noise ratio? Yeah, signal to noise ratio looking like. And what can be done to reduce the noise, for example, so the feature teams can focus on the actual signal rather than, mm-hmm, the noise. And this is what we, you know, this is where we come in.
Gotcha. Makes sense.
And is the ultimate kind of the impact that you make and drive, is that measured in terms of SLA improvements? Is that your goal to increase those?
So, yes. So we have different KPIs or metrics that we measure our success and we go by the phases that we have, you know, the handbook that I was talking about. And we have various KPIs and metrics which are defined for each of the phase. So we measure everything at the baseline at the start of our, you know, the 6 months duration. And then we measure it again every month and then at the end of the semester to see how far we have come. And one of those, you know, would be, you know, for service health, we are also measuring different kind of, you know, brain detection, for example, the, you know, brain detection or
that's our platform, yes, for live site incident detection. Again, I think I'd have to go back and look, but I'm pretty sure we had somebody from the brain team on at one point to talk about that,
okay,
as well. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. yeah. So we have different KPIs around that. The time, you know, the time it takes to mitigate, detect, engage, and so on and so forth. We take different percentiles and we measure those. So it's a very, you know, feedback loop driven or iterative process that we do. And that is what helps us. So we have had services that we have been partnering with for the last, for example, two, three years, or even, you know, going before I joined. It is amazing to see the kind of impact that we have had from, you know, the volume perspective, the noise perspective, the SLI, you know, the service level indicators of the service and so on and so forth. So, yes.
And given that SRE as a function has been around a while now, you say you've got these runbooks, playbooks to kind of to drive how you respond, how you engage and all the rest of it. Is that learning and that best practice something that you publish as well to third parties to take advantage of in terms of, you know, that there's other ASVs maybe not quite as big as Microsoft, but other ISVs out there that could be doing with baking this kind of level of practice into their own solutions and engineering?
That's a great idea, but we are not there yet. This is very much an internal playbook, runbook that we do our business by. also, I want to mention this is very new, just 2 years, okay. I think 2 or 3 years old. Right now, I would say we are still testing it out, vetting it out, making changes as, you know, we end our, you know, 6 months and then come back and then make changes. So it's an iterative process right now. You know, that's our operating model, or, you know, that's the structured framework that we use. Hopefully, you know, we'll get to a state where we would be able to offer it more widely than just within Azure or within Microsoft.
Yeah, so I've got some customers that have an SRE function within their organization, but they don't tend to engage in the same way that you do. So they're not going in after the service is already being created and then doing stuff. What they tend to be focused on is more proactive. So creating blueprints, creating patterns, and publishing those for other people to then, you know, to draw down and lead from. So yeah, interesting. Thank you.
Yeah. So we have used that model where we distilled all our learnings from the first few services that we engaged with. And I think that playbook is kind of that distillation of our experience on all these years and what has been more impactful. So when we start engaging with the service, the first 6 months, our aim is to get the low-hanging fruit, the little wins that dramatically or exponentially increase or improve the reliability of or the quality of a service.
In my experience, services, any service that continues to be run, continues to be used by customers, the code is changing, the load is changing, the customer use is changing. So the care and feeding of that service really never ends, right? When y'all come in and do these engagements with these services, obviously the service isn't going to stop running. But how do you know when you're done? Is it generally a time bound thing? Like, hey, we'll come here for 2 years and then we'll move on. Or is it, you know, you want to hit, you know, you agree on some mutual KPIs, and when you hit that KPI, you move on to another servicing. Like, how do you know when you're done? Because you're like the work is never done, but you may be done with that service.
Yeah. Great question. In our playbook, we have an exit criteria for each of the phase. And that criteria is also per KPI. So each of the KPI that we measure, we also have an exit criteria. When do we say we are done? What's the definition of done? That was something which was very interesting to me because I thought the same way. At what point do we say we are done, or at what point do we disengage? But that exit criteria is a very clear definition of done. For example, you know, phase one, the fundamentals, we go in, we have an exact roadmap of which KPIs we need to move the needle for. And then when do we say we are done? And then we move on to phase two. And again, you know, it doesn't have to be sequential, but this is what the best practice that we have learned over the years has been. We try to focus on one or at most two phases, and then we move on to the next phase. And to be honest, we have not had a service disengage from our team up till now. So I'm not really the right person to answer that question, but this is
how we... They like you so much, they won't let you leave.
I guess. We have been, we have been growing, and we are again growing again end of this year, but we haven't had a case where the service disengaged. So maybe I'll learn it while being here.
And bearing in mind, this is a public podcast, you might not be able to answer the question, but I'm just kind of curious to know if there's any, you know, one particular thing that you've done that stands out as a great win or a great save or something like that you can talk about in kind of generic terms without.
Yes, I am thinking about how to word it. But I think in the security domain, that's what I would say. The service that I currently work with, they had a low scoring on that scale, on the scale. And I think our biggest win has been to bring that score up by maybe 150 points in this last 6 months, and which was a difficult feat to achieve. There are a number of dimensions, components that, you know, come into play when we think about that scoring. And we had to engage with very large teams. And coming in, you know, as a new SRE, as a new team, helping out with the reliability. So there have been many challenges, which I can talk to you offline, not comfortable.
Yeah, no, fair enough. And you know, without knowing what the scale is, I can't tell if 150 is a good improvement or not, but I take it from your reaction that it is a great improvement.
Yes, so, and I'm very excited when we, you know, close our 6 months. That's one of the achievements we will highlight.
Right, the other thing I want to give credit to the SRE team, because I think, Sadaf, you're sort of understating the level to which you know some of these services. Y'all actually run LiveSight for the ARM product, right? The ARM service. Yeah. We had Vlad on, you know, a few months back to talk about ARM and sort of their scale. And that's a very complicated service, very high scale, and really critical to the platform, right? When ARM has a problem, the rest of Azure has a problem. And your team actually is the team that handles the live site for that service. So, you know, that's, you know, I think you're really, you know, not in a negative way, but you're sort of understating the degree, like y'all know that service backwards and forwards, inside and out. And so are really strong partners with that team if they're willing to trust you with their live site.
Yes.
You know, so.
Yes. And not just ARM, we run the live site reviews for all the services that we own. That is one of the areas we consider.
Okay.
Yeah, we consider ourselves experts in not just running the live site, but, you know, all the actions that, you know, come out of it, all of the KPIs that are attached to that phase. And that is what we recently set up with the new service that I started engaging with this year.
Okay. Awesome. Great. Yeah,
that's
I did not know
that. It's a huge responsibility, isn't it? That's great.
Yeah, it is. A lot of, you know, a lot of, I would say, just let's just say ups and downs while we were setting that up. A lot of resistance from the functional area owners on why do we need another meeting? You know, we all are, you know, swamped with meetings. I am, you know, I'm very proud. I want to share this. So in the last run of LiveSight reviews for this specific service, we got a great call out, kudos overall for running and taking charge and all the action items that are being driven out of those LiveSight reviews. So I'm very proud to be an owner there.
It must give comfort to the service owners and the people that are in those teams as well to know that they've got a, you know, a different pair of eyes on it, and you're taking so much responsibility for it.
Yes, I think they needed someone. What we do is kind of take a holistic view of things, and that was what was missing. They would mitigate incidents, or they would look at their, you know, on a day-to-day basis. There was no one looking holistically at, you know, what happened in the last 30 days or 15 days. I think that's where we are bringing that value, to get that holistic, why is this happening? Asking the right questions is also, you know, kind of steering them towards the right repairs that they need to take on.
But I think you've kind of highlighted what we were talking about earlier, which is architecting a service requires a certain set of skills. Writing good code requires a certain set of skills. Planning for scalability requires a certain set of skills, and planning for security, you know, requires, but they're all different. I mean, you're all writing code, and so theoretically, well, I'm a dev, I can write all that. Yeah, but if you don't know the right question to ask, you don't have the right perspective or some of that broader visibility, right? That's really where, in my experience, y'all shine, right? It's the ability to bring in and bring those standards and best practices again. And then the devs can go off and code to their heart's content, but now they're asking the right questions. They sort of know the right way to go about it, and then they'll write the best code.
Great. Absolutely. Awesome. I think that's the value that we bring to the table.
Absolutely. Well, great. Well, really appreciate you coming on. Any last thoughts about SRE?
Can I ask one last question?
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, Russell. Sorry. Just because we haven't mentioned the AI phrase yet this episode. So I was just curious, Sadaf, if you leverage AI as part of your toolkit in terms of what you do and how that kind of manifests itself.
Yes, I'm glad you asked. We have a whole initiative where we are focusing on AI efforts that are happening in our space, in our universe. As an example, we have successfully done like a hackathon project a few months back, where we took all the incident data and we used the AI tools, just being, you know, the AI tools to kind of run through that data and then generate insights on if I am an on-call engineer and I see that incident. Let me look at the nine, instead of me manually looking through, you know, 90 days of data or 30 days of data to drive insights, I actually have that readily available. And that has been a great success, just to kind of see how the last few engineers solve that. And, you know, that kind of improved our the time, the TTX metrics by quite a high percentage. And I'm very excited about, you know, that was just a proof of concept. But we have had like similar efforts going in various dimensions, horizontal work streams that we are doing around AI. More to come on that, but I'm very excited to see how it manifests in my service, especially to help the on-call engineers, not just by reducing the time, but also by reducing the cognitive load that they have on, you know, yeah. on them.
Great.
You know, that's a very important metric. We care about the health of our engineers, and the reducing that load would greatly help, in my opinion.
Great. Hey, you said TTX. Is that like time to resolve, time to mitigate? Like,
yes, time to, you know, do Thank whatever, you. Mitigate, detect, engage, yeah.
Thank you. That's been brilliant. It's nice to get a peek under the covers as to, you know, how this massive hyperscale cloud stuff gets operated and run under the covers. Thank you.
It is not just a bunch of us humans running around trying to poke holes. and we've checked that box, Russell. So we did not go a show and didn't mention AI. So, you know, our leadership will be thrilled. Excellent. Well, yeah, Sadaf, any last questions or I'm sorry, any last comments that you want to leave with the audience? This has been a great intro, so I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yes. No. I think my last thoughts are, you know, as you mentioned, Russell, that, you know, there are clients who actually do this in a different way. It is great to think about the impact that SRE, you know, the site reliability engineering team as a whole is making. I do want to learn more about, you know, what other people are doing versus what we are doing and the areas or, you know, opportunities of improvement. I think that's it. I'm just happy
I'd
to share.
I'd love to connect you if you're up for it.
Yes,
I can get you in touch with
because
it.
We do things in a certain way. And we came up with this playbook just to have that structure to our effort, because previously we were thinking we'll just go in and, you know, just take 1, 2, 3 issues and proactively or solve them. I would like to learn more.
Great.
Awesome.
Okay, and great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so proud of you guys for, you know, 500 something episode. So great work.
It's amazing how we just had the 500th not too long ago. And I was sort of scratching my head going, really? Has it been that many? Like, it just seems like we've just been doing it. So, no, great. Thank you very much. And thank you very much for coming on. I know you had reached out sort of blindly, seeing if it was a good idea. And so I think the topic was great. So really appreciate you. And maybe we'll have you back in the future as well to talk about where it evolves.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Have a great day.
Awesome. Thanks, all.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.